welcome back to the Doug Show, people, for another episode of the Festival at the End of the World. Now, last time we took you back, but this time we're going to take you all the way back. Way, way, way back, in fact, to January of 1993, the winter of our discontent. As the impending criminal justice bill instigated a citywide clampdown on the free party scene and squat culture with it, I would leave London for 2 weeks to work in Portugal and not return for 3 years. As part of what would become a decade of world travel and adventure, as a street performing artiste, un artiste de la rue, a dodgy mime artist, or as AJ had crowned me, that avant-garde twat. For that one summer season in Portugal in 1993, it could have gone either way. I'd worked through the winter up in the mountains, carrying rocks and such like you do. But by spring, I'd saved enough money for a guitar and I hit the coast as a busker. Now, the noble life of a troubadour was fun and liberating, but also lent itself heavily towards alcoholism, as I would quickly discover. Everywhere you went, people wanted a song, be they pissed tourists on the beach bar terraces or warm-hearted locals in backstreet cafes. And the guitar was like a key. It opened doors. It got me in and out of a lot of trouble. And most of it, the fun kind. Now, I played to the tourists in the streets for money, and in the car parks outside the clubs to the locals for love. This is where they would all hang out, buying their beers for a fraction of the price from the food kiosks outside, rather than paying the tourist prices inside. Now, the bouncers from one of these nightclubs had taken a particular dislike to me for this, and I was just about drunk enough to think that perhaps I should be having a word with them about it, which in retrospect would have been a really terrible idea. Now, luckily, I was rescued from that situation by a gay Hell's Angel, called, ironically, Angel. Truth be told, the endless boozing and street life, sleeping on the beaches, etc., was taking its toll on me, and I had decided I'd go back to England. I didn't really know why, but there was a girl I'd left behind, and an art project I'd started, and the Hell's Angel dropped me in Lagos for breakfast, a party town in the southwest of the Algarve. Somehow, I made it through the day and found myself at a beach party, a friend who never showed up had invited me to. So there I was, amongst strangers, really, playing around the fire, but quite delirious by that point. Now, it's probably not my best performance, but hey, it was a farewell gig nonetheless. That was it. I would leave the next day for England. Upon opening my eyes the next morning, my head was pounding and my throat was dry. I had this sand in my mouth and eyes from keeling over at the fire at some point. I was still fully clothed and I was sweating profusely, so I'm fumbling for the zip of my jacket and I feel this strange kind of hole above my heart. It takes me a minute to realise, but that's where someone had cut through the front of my jacket and stolen what little money I had for the journey, though curiously left my passport. But worse than that, as I cast about me, dry eyes coming into focus, I realised my guitar was also gone.
Where's my fucking guitar?
I screamed at the hostile, glaring sun. Now this would be the catalyst for a series of really unfortunate events that would see me veer a hash deal gone wrong with some crazy Germans in the mountains, and an incredibly unlucky encounter with the Portuguese police, spend fortunately only 1 week in the prison that sits where the river meets the sea at Vila Nova Mil Fontes. Oh, what a week that was. Until here I was, locked in a cell. What's it trying to tell me? I made a promise to myself that if I got out of jail, I would not return to the UK or get involved with any more illegal activities, but I'd stay in Portugal and live the life of an artist. And sure enough, upon release, things had started to go right again, straight away. Everything was on the up. Summer season was more or less all singing and all dancing when I got back south. I'd been given a guitar and taken in by a potter who let me stay for a week and make some ceramic art in her kiln. I hit the coast with a sweet little busking spot in a dodgy marina full of well-heeled tourists, where, a couple of weeks later, a young and quite handsome, it has to be said, English lad appeared and asked me for a cigarette. And the rest, as they say, is kind of history. Johnny would turn out to be one of my most golden friendships and a close travelling companion over the next decade. It was in fact he who, as I was leaving the mountains the following January, again with some foolish notion to return to the UK, though this time only for a visit maybe. But as I was leaving my guitar behind, he handed me a mask. A cheap carnival mask at that, but he was concerned I'd have no means of hustling any cash on the road. "Listen, if you get stuck, just put it on and stand still and see what happens." A small piece of advice that would change my life entirely and forever. Without knowing it, I was on my way to the carnival in Cadiz, Andalusia, Spain. I mean, I knew it was happening, but that wasn't necessarily my destination. I was thinking I'd head to Gibraltar and find a way to get a flight. Little did I know, that was never going to happen. One of the crazy Germans I was in prison with was an amazing dude called Egon. He was a hurdy-gurdy man. That's like a hand organ, and he had a puppet that would dance on the front of it. But this tiny, wizened, ancient, and quite dwarf-like character from the Black Forest. But as a parting gift, he had given me 4 25 peseta coins. Now they were the ones with the holes in, and he put them on a string as a necklace. "For the luck of the road, my young my friend. For the good life, the free man, huh?" he had said. That gift, literally, was the gift that kept giving. It also kept me alive all the way to Cadiz. Because every time I would ask the price of anything, be it food or coffee or whatever, then go to take it off to pay, no one would take the money from the necklace. No one's going to take a traveller's last 100 pesetas, at least not in Spain. So I ate and drank for free all the way there, and any time I was out of coin. Sure enough, when I arrived in Cadiz, I put the mask on and stood still, and sure enough, people put money in the hat. Within a couple of weeks, my robotic skills from the 80s were coming back and I had a banging little show coming together. And that's when I met AJ in the queue for the soup kitchen and kind of joined Circo Claro, which is a loose street circus, for their Iberian tour. I got a double act going with another member of the team, Jim, and off we went. At Las Fallas de Valencia, a huge fire festival in Catalonia on the east of Spain, we smashed it as a double act. And that was another big turning point for me. I mean, maybe England could wait. Jim and his sidekick Paolo, they were going back to work for a guy called Roy Weirdbeard in the Travellers Fields in Glastonbury Festival. And this was only 1994. It would be nearly a decade later I would come to know Mr. Weirdbeard myself, in the heady days and nights that saw the rise and fall of the mighty Las Vegas. But that too, you guessed it, is yet another story. By the time we hit Barcelona, I was going seriously into reverse. I recall phoning my mum, funnily enough, whose response was remarkably similar, as it would be 25 years later. I mean, if you're with good people, having a good time, my love, and performing and all that, I mean, I should stay there, on the beach. I think she was secretly relieved that I had escaped London and the dark days to come. Also, I loved Barcelona in that time. It was an incredible melting pot of a city, still oozing anarchist charm, and one of those crossroads kind of places. Las Ramblas is a big wide pedestrian avenue leading down to the port area. And that was where street shows, and especially dodgy mime artists and avant-garde twats like me, would all perform. The hats weren't big money-wise, like in a festival, so you had to work harder to survive or accumulate any cash for the road. But it didn't matter. It was just a great place to be. And also it honed your craft, as you had to have a good show and put the hours in to get by. Now, I would stay there for 3 or 4 months in the end, long after Circo Claro disappeared off to Glastonbury to meet Mr. Weirdbeard. But one day, before they departed, this big group show had appeared. There were 8 or 10 performers, all in white, with loads of like crazy white set. A stepladder they would all pose off, and an armchair, and a birdcage that they could stick their heads in, and a white painted floor so they could stretch out and swim about. Me and Jim stopped to watch them. Every few coins, they would change pose, coming alive in slow motion, blowing bubbles, as dramatic classical music played. I remember saying to Jim how I could never do that, performing out without a mask and with white painted face. It was incredibly beautiful and quite mesmerizing to watch. It was a week or so later, at a new friend's house, I was introduced to some Spanish crew, who she said also made shows on the Ramblers, just like me. And it suddenly clicked. It was this big group show. Now, I was more than a little starstruck, singing their praises in my awful Spanish. Muy bueno, muy, muy, muy bueno. Our friend translated that they were short of people for the show the coming weekend, and would I like to join them? Despite what I had said to Jim when watching the show about not performing without a mask, I said yes immediately. Truth be told, I was more than a little bit besotted by one of the girls who had these amazing, piercing green eyes. And though the romance didn't blossom with the green-eyed girl, as she had a boyfriend, who was also really lovely as it goes, but it was amazing to stare into those eyes for several hours in such a dramatic setting, and I'd perform with them every weekend for a couple of months in the end. Learning a new form was exciting, and quite a bit of Spanish in the process. But yes, infatuation can be a great motivator to overcoming personal barriers. Now, when I eventually left Barcelona, it was heading south with a girl called Kate, who was Portugal bound. Now, we stopped in Valencia, but out of festival time, it was a no-go. The cops came down heavy on the robot gig before I could even get a hat in. As we walked back to the truck, I was casually looking in the bins like you do, or at least I do anyway, and there, outside a military building of some kind, bundled up with nothing else in the bin, were three white tunics with the red Templar's cross on the front. It must be a sign, we thought. As I said, Barcelona was not a great earner. We really needed to make some money. The next stop was a little place called Elche, and we'd passed on the way up there with Circo Claro. We'd been taken in a bit by some of the locals there with a bar and taken care of. So I said to Kate, geez, we could really do with some kind of like green eco fest to be going on or something like that. Now weirdly, but surely enough, that was exactly what was starting the next day. So we spent the day making the third tunic into headdresses. And as dusk started to descend, we found a spot at the entrance to the festival. And using a chair to create some height, we set up in a one-up, one-down kind of formation. We had this cassette player and a tape that had this ambient music on it, but there was like a minute or two silence to begin with. So, we keep our eyes closed, and when the music starts, we'll open them and just do it, yeah? We agreed. But the minutes seemed to drag on forever. It felt like an eternity, there with our eyes closed, and you could hear the sort of hubbub of people passing. The tune started, and when I opened my eyes, there's an enormous crowd. Like 200 or 300 people gathered, like big. And they're blocking the entrance to this festival entirely. The coins are flying in the hat. It was a couple of tunes in. By this time, quite a few people had sat down and a huge ring stood around the back. But I saw this guy appear with two cops right there in the middle. He looked flustered, angry even. And he was a big guy in a kind of white shirt and slacks. The festival organizer, I would come to discover. But he began pushing and shoving his way towards us, around the side of the seated edge. He was huffing and puffing and looking down to place his feet between people, then looking up and complaining in a hurry to get through. I mean, we carried on regardless, but I watched. And slowly, he visibly began to change, to calm down, slowing down and pausing as he made his way through, kind of getting quieter and smaller somehow, until by the time he was close enough to intervene, he was just stationary, transfixed and smiling, catching occasional bubbles and laughing, eyes wide in wonder, like he was a child again. Now he didn't just wait until the end of the song. He waited like half an hour till the end of the cassette and therefore the end of the show before rapturously applauding. And when he did come to speak with the two smiling policemen, I mean, then my Spanish was still not perfect by any stretch, but I could tell he was appreciative. They still very politely seemed concerned about something though. Luckily, an audience member could translate. He told us that he loved the show, but we were blocking the entrance to his festival. But if we wanted, we could come inside and perform, and they'd give us our own area for the entire week of the festival. And that not only saved our arse in terms of gas money, as we would earn enough that week to drive all the way to Portugal if we wanted, but it also showed the power the performance had to engage and mesmerise an audience. I'd go on to travel the world with that show, as a double act with Johnny and others, in various shapes and forms, travelling all over Europe and as far afield as New Zealand. But the last time these ghostly white ethereal characters appeared was actually as a procession joining the anti-war demonstrations in London against the Iraq War in 2003. Now fast forward to 2019, when I just returned all fired up and inspired from the Tribal Gathering Festival, where I'd first created Plastic Paradiso, and I heard about the planned XR Spring Uprising. And it was quite a casual thought to bring those characters back, only this time in red. I'd heard about XR closing the bridges the previous autumn, and grannies gluing themselves to the roads, etc. I mean, it sounded inspiring and quite hilarious all at the same time. One of the Invisible Circus crew, Justine Squire, was likewise inspired to action, and we got together to plan circus parades initially. I mentioned the Red idea as a casual aside, really, and to be honest, without her reminding me a few days before it, it probably wouldn't have happened. But as it was imminent, I put a shout out on Facebook for red fabric, and an old friend immediately replied. They had 8 bin bags of red velvet from an old cabaret venue, and we could have it. He'd drop it off the next morning. I totally didn't anticipate the impact we were about to have. I thought we would be just one of many colourful, creative responses to answer the call, and in many ways, of course, we were. The circus processions were also amazing, as were so many other awesome and beautiful things. Things that people brought to that first outpouring of hope and love that was the spring uprising. The whole festival vibe that descended upon central London, I mean, it was truly awesome to experience and be a part of. And we'd sent our costumes in on the pink boat, which I watched arrive and be set up in the middle of Oxford Circus the next morning. And that was truly a beautiful wonder to behold in itself. But the powerful and engaging impact of the Reds was not to be underestimated, it turned out. The de-escalating nature of it in intense standoffs between police and protesters, the joy and or tears it evoked, or a strange mix of both quite often. And what I really loved was like the bewilderment of tourists or non-protesters who just bumped into it randomly. Not to mention the police, of course, that delightfully awkward reaction of authority, who just didn't know where to look or what to do with themselves. That probably had to be the best bit about it. A couple of classic quotes were, "I'd rather be punched in the face by Millwall supporters than stared at by you lot." Or there was the sergeant who'd just been briefing his constables on Waterloo Bridge, turning back to say, "Oh, and one more thing. Whatever you do, don't arrest any of those fucking red people." But as if its impact on the ground in London wasn't enough, what happened next was truly incredible. Slowly but surely, red rebel groups just started appearing all over the world, country after country, from Australia to Japan, all over Europe, often with multiple groups in each country. It went viral really quickly and became impossible to track. I have no idea how many groups that there were in the end, or still are. But it became a very accessible and engaging form of performance protest. And that, for me personally, was especially moving. The fact that anyone could do it, you didn't need to come from a performance background. It was open to all ages. And a lot of people that couldn't quite find their place in protest found it with the Red Rebels. Plus, knowing even while I sleep, they're out there, weirding out authority figures, all over the world.
I can't recall the first time I saw the Red Rebels, but whenever it was, the power of the slow red windswept movements and gestures was immediate. The impact of the slowly treading silent troop at the still heart of a chaotic demonstration. Amazing. I wanted to be part of it immediately.
The Red Rebels turned up, you know, it was so eerie. I had, you know, and they just didn't say a word, no smiles, nothing, and they just held hand and surrounded the truck, and I mean, it was so powerful. For me, I think they just personified the dread, the terror, the grief of the ecological climate disaster.
Seeing the Red Rebels at my first rebellion in London 2019, I was struck by the stillness, the gravity, and the grief that I related to with regard to the climate crisis.
I love the coming together of the men and the women. I love that we become something else when we put on those robes. I love the way we do it and we dress each other. I love the intimacy and the gentleness of it. And I think that builds into something very magical and powerful when we go out together.
It has a very feminine energy to it. And so it was lovely being able to create such a, you know, a ruckus and a disruption without using my gender or my masculinity or my body size in a way that could be ever seen as a violent or aggressive confrontation, but yet being incredibly disruptive was a real gift.
Even though the Autumn Rebellion was more challenging, it was still a beautiful thing, with over 80 Reds coming from all over the country. We're also taking them to many of the summer festivals in between, putting them on the main stages of Boomtown, Glastonbury, and even Reading Rock Festival. So by the end of the year, it felt like we were winning. Things were going to change, whether they liked it or not. And I guess they did change. Just maybe not totally in the way we imagined they would. As I left the UK to go and be part of the build for Tribal Gathering 2020 in January, the Boomtown posters were all over the London tube stations. State of Emergency. That was the show title for the 2020 festival. A decision the festival director was the only one to back me on. In the narrative, a sinister AI had released a virus on the unsuspecting human population in an attempt to contain and control their impact on the natural environment. Spooky, right? That, of course, was a concept that would come back to haunt me soon enough. But when I landed in Panama on that remote stretch of coastline and watched the biggest, weirdest, and largest slow-motion shooting star tumble across the night sky and burn out above the festival site, I had no idea what was about to happen. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like what you've been hearing, please share it around, tell your friends, and we'll be back with the next episode real soon, here on The Doug Show, at the festival at the end of the world.